True or false? True or false? James, over to you first.
Oh, God.
A woman from Arizona this week claimed that God impregnated her with Donald Trump's child. True or false?
True.
Oh, wow, that was a quick... That was like, yeah it's America. Someone's got to say it at some point.
Dude, like, nothing shocks me anymore. I'll go with true.
Max?
I'll say true. No, actually, I'll say false. It's probably somebody else. Maybe she was impregnated by God or something like that.
But not with
Donald Trump. No.
It's so fucking stupid.
If it's true, I will literally not even be surprised.
Madge?
Yeah, I'll go false. If it was Alabama, I would have believed you.
But Arizona seems sensible.
They got the iced tea.
It's true.
Fucking all.
But we're not surprised. No, you know, no, if you had said this 20 years ago, people were like, what?
Yeah.
George Bush being a dad? Well, Bill Clinton, it would have been 20 years ago. So actually, that is less surprising.
Oh, well, Bill.
That's, yeah.
But is it true? Is it really his?
I did not have.
It's possible.
Number two. Trump today compared the UK-US trade deal to the D-Day landings. Max?
I'd say false, because I don't think Trump knows about the D-Day landings. because he wasn't there. If he wasn't there, he doesn't know anything about it.
Madge?
I'll go true. And just, it's someone probably wrote it for him, like Vance or someone.
It's possible, isn't it? Taking all the credit. James?
I'm going to say true, man. That sounds like a Trump thing to say, you know?
It is actually false, but again, it's fucking hilarious how you all think that it could be true.
Stop doing Donald Trump ones. It's so believable.
Did Trump say, is it false in the sense that Trump said something even more outlandish than that? Like he personally, you know, won World War II because he's the greatest guy that's ever lived forever. And you know.
Have you guys, just to say, have you guys seen these cabinet meetings? It's almost like North Korean style stuff where they're like, and Mr. President, you're the greatest leader of all time. Yeah. It's disgraceful.
To be fair, it was pretty much like that today, wasn't it? You're great. Keir Starmer calling him Donald.
Oh,
Keir. Like, wow.
I suppose you've got to know how to handle a narcissist, haven't you? You know what I mean?
I mean, I think we'll definitely get into the trade deal and whether or not he handled it well or not, because... Runcorn by-election this week. Madge, Reform won it by 20 votes. True or false?
That's false.
You think that's false?
That's false, yeah.
James?
I'm going to say false only because I've answered the last two questions true. Again, I wouldn't be surprised. Nothing surprises me or shocks me anymore. So I'm going to say false just for balance. See if I get lucky.
Max?
False. I think it was something like 4 or 7 votes.
Six,
single figures.
You're all correct. Yeah, it was false. It was 6 votes, which is a record. The first time it ever happened. Final question. James, the city of Stockholm told the US embassy to go stick it when it came to DEI and their contracts with workers. The US embassy told the city of Stockholm that they wanted the city to rescind all of its DEI programs. True or false?
I don't know. You know, it's you know, it's the times we're living in, man. You know, it could be true. It could be false. I'm gonna go wildcard. I'm just gonna say true.
Max?
I'd say it's true. The Trump administration has been telling everyone. I think Vance has been saying pretty much similar stuff about, well, if you want to work with us, you need to get rid of all of these DEI, all of this DEI stuff. So I'd say it's true.
Madge?
Yeah, I'll go true as well. Big up Scandinavia. They would say something like that.
It is true. The American embassy did try and pull that on Stockholm, the city. And then the city said, if you continue pulling this shit, we will pull any ability of you to get any contracts and give you any planning permission for any of your buildings.
Yeah, man. That's the way to do it. What did they say? Okay, then. Sorry.
Nah, they'd never admit that. They're narcissists.
It was the greatest rejection anyone's ever had.
Do you know that the new councillor for Durham Council, Darren Grimes, has refused to take part in any DEI training? and then they discovered that there isn't actually any DEI training.
That guy, man. Who elected him?
Yes.
Or Andrea Jenkins. We'll get talking about that in the show. Welcome, everyone, to the Sunday Roast. And we're back with two great guests and a co-host. James, can you please introduce yourself?
I am James Kennedy. I'm a musician and an author and a podcaster from Cardiff, South Wales. I play in a band called James Kennedy and the Underdogs. And I've got my new book, Loud Medicine, coming out on June the 5th. So there's a plug.
Max, can you please... I mean, don't need an introduction, but Max, please introduce yourself.
My name is Max. I run the Robespierre channel, where I talk about British politics and Brexit in particular. But Brexit's pretty much on the back burner, so it's more about Trump.
Madge.
Big Match Studios. I run the Big Match Studios YouTube channel where I cover British politics, and I'm the co-host of this show with Alex.
Right. Are we on the Titanic and we're all sinking slowly, but the rest, like, we're the ones saying we've hit an iceberg and everyone else is in full denial? I know we've got a lot of topics to cover today, but I thought I'd start off with that question. Max, what do you think? Are we on the Titanic? Are we the only ones talking about the iceberg?
It certainly feels like that. The world has gone completely insane. I'm just blown away every day where Donald Trump comes out with something new, which is even more insane. This with the tariffs, imposing the tariffs and saying, well, we need to impose these tariffs because we're going to make America great again. We're going to bring in all this money. And then China has said, OK, well, we're not actually going to play ball. We're going to impose our own tariffs. And it's just this back and forth. We don't know what he's going to do from one day to the next. And businesses in the US don't know what he's going to do. And then anyone who wants to trade with the US is thinking, OK, well, you know, what do we do? So we're seeing a divergence of trade away from the US. When it comes to British politics, your question was quite open. So I'm just thinking of what's happening with Farage and Reform. People obviously are not happy with the government and they're not happy with the Conservatives. So they're taking a chance on Nigel Farage again. It's not like, you know, if he was something new, you could sort of understand why people are throwing their support behind him. But it's insane. This guy has been, he's a proven charlatan. And people are saying, well, let's give him a chance and we're going to see exactly what he and his councils do.
What do you think, James? Are you the band on the ship?
Well, I would definitely be in the band on the ship, yeah. But I mean, yeah, it feels like that. But at the same time, if those of us that feel like we know what's going on and, you know, probably are, you know, on the right side of this conversation, if we're being outsmarted or kind of almost outbranded by the guys that are convincing everybody that the Titanic isn't sinking because it hit an iceberg, but it's sinking because of small dinghies with like a couple of dudes coming over is what's sinking the Titanic. Then, you know, I mean, is it kind of onus on us that we're not doing a good enough job? You know, if this barrage of like populist, narcissistic, sociopath assholes is peddling the same bullshit that they were peddling 100 years ago, and they're gaining more momentum than those of us on the left, you know, who are a bit, who presumably more enlightened and more informed than in the right side of history, then, you know, I mean, I'm starting to feel more disenfranchised and more pissed off with my side of the team, because we're losing to these guys. You know, how are they winning? How are they winning the conversation again with the same old fucking lie they were peddling out, you know, 100 years ago?
It's a tough one. I did some flyering this week, and I just said to anyone taking the flyer, I was like, do you hate Donald Trump? Do you hate Nigel Farage? Do you hate Brexit? Take this, vote for this party. And there were people stopping, being triggered by what I said and coming back over to collect the pamphlet. And they're like, yeah, I do hate Donald Trump and I do hate Brexit and I do hate Nigel Farage. And you're going, shit, we've actually gotten to a point where we've actually got this split. But you're also noticing it's like that type of rhetoric seems to be grabbing people's attention. Not many people are saying that. I mean, out of the three major parties, Conservatives, Labour, Reform, who's really the anti-Trump party? None of them. And yet the majority of the population hate the guy. I think the Daily Mail this week came out and, like, Zoe Gardner's doing the Stop the Trump rally. And the Daily Mail have come out and said, dump Trump. don't let him come over the state visit. Madge, what do you think?
Yeah, I think with Trump, I think he, because America is so powerful, he'll get away with a lot. And that's why Labour have kind of been cucked by him so badly. The Tories as well are in a similar position, I think. And they're trying to be nice to him to, in order to kind of get the tariffs lowered, which might have worked, but I'm not sure yet because we don't know what concessions have been offered to Donald Trump. Like, he's got the state visit, which he wants because it'll be historic because it's two-time. But yeah, I think America's just too powerful for it. The UK is desperate for growth, as we've seen with the India trade deal, with a lot of the decisions they've made. It's just trying to get the, you know, boost the growth statistics without anything else really being taken into account. And so, yeah, with the reform stuff, like I saw Matt List talking about how, you know, this isn't, I think Max, you covered it actually, like this isn't a new party, you know, they've been existing for a while. It's like, okay, you finally figured out how to do your job again, then that's good to know, because you guys have been doing a dog shit like role. Like Goodall was talking about, oh, we have to give them proper scrutiny. And I was like, you should have been doing that about for about 15 years, buddy. That's the job. That's what you're meant to be doing. Yeah, scrutinizing them, looking at their record. You know, you've only just seen their immigration record, or, you know, their policy of one in, one out being properly scrutinized by Laura Koonsberg of all people. Jesus Christ, man. It's a sad world when Koonsberg's actually doing her job properly. But like, that's the point, is that they should have been scrutinized from the start. You know, she was, you know, she actually did a good job, you know, talking to Zia Yusuf about, are you going to use taxpayers' money to deal with, you know, legal challenges against the asylum hotels?
You've told people publicly that you will resist migrants coming mm-hmm. to their communities,
yep.
but you don't have the direct power to do anything about it. Unless, are you saying Reform's lawyers will try to use the courts to close asylum hotels? I'm trying to understand what you actually
there are
do.
A number of instruments at our disposal, which our teams are working. We've only just won the election, right? So what we're going to be doing in Reform Control Council, this is our commitment, we will use every instrument available to us. And those include things like injunctions, those include things like judicial reviews, those include things like the actually enforcing the planning laws, because we think a lot of these changes that are being made are in violation of a number of these laws. And we're going to look at budget reallocation.
You're new.
As well.
He couldn't answer that. And all Labour have to say is, look, they're spending money on bogus legal challenges instead of fixing bars. That's an easy dub. Like, I don't see why they're not going for that angle. Like, they're meant to be housing, you know, looking after vulnerable people in their councils. Instead, they're going to be waging bogus legal challenges and all sorts of other nonsense. Like, this is such an easy win for everyone else, honestly. But, you know, they're going to choose not to do it, blocking planning permission. I saw a couple of people covering the fact they want to get rid of green jobs in their area as well, which is, like, really dumb because that area makes a lot of money through green tech. So there's a lot of angles they can go for. It's a target-rich environment. It's just a question of, is anyone smart enough to really go for it? But, yeah, with Trump, like, I saw Paul Mason talking about Nigel Farage's Trump's man in Britain. He's like, that's fair, but you could also argue Keir Starmer's Trump's man in Britain. Because he's, you know, parroting everything else. Oh, globalization is dead. Oh, but we've got a trade deal with India suddenly. What's that then? So, it doesn't, a lot of the stuff doesn't make sense. It's just because America's too powerful. Like, the only country willing to stand up to them was probably China. The US bloc did stand up to them and got results. But I think he did all of this to start a fight with China. It's just all cover. It's just all cover. If you look at the countries he's caved to Vietnam, they've got a temporary exemption. There's a couple other countries with temporary exemptions as well. China's the only one that didn't get it. And so I think he's trying to say, as you play ball, then, you know, you can get good agreements off us. But if you retaliate, it's going to be bad. But I think all of this was to start his second trade war with China, which he did during his first term.
You think it's just a follow-up, basically? Well, I mean, it is, isn't it? It's just part two.
I mean, if you look at it, I can't remember, there was a Newsnight clip with a trade expert from, I want to say, London School of Economics. She was saying, well, you know, China actually won one of the cases in the WTO against America regarding like tariffs or something like that. And so, you know, he did this in the first place. You know, farmers struggled in America because of the tariffs and things like that on Chinese products and Chinese retaliatory tariffs. So this is just a continuation of it because, you know, China a big dog over there and America's scared of him. So that's one of the reasons he's doing this. Also, the fact that it's a villain. That's what every good story needs. You know, you're trying to villainize China, but then China were like, cool, we'll just do agreements with everyone being the nice guy. You absolute moron. So, yeah.
It's funny how we were talking about this last week, and it was Japan, South Korea, and China had all come together to discuss how to deal with Donald Trump.
Yeah, historically besties. Historically, the besties, you know, the best friends, you know, definitely never fought with each other or invade another country or colonize another one of them. They're definitely not.
Genocide.
None of that ever happened. Yeah, genocide or genocide. Anything. Like killing a monarch, splitting their country, putting in a puppet ruler. You know, that never happened. No, never. So, you know, historically, best friends, always. And, you know, Trump's put these best friends back together again to, you know, trade with each other a bit more. So, yeah, you know, big up Donald for uniting neighboring countries with each other.
Trumpty Dumpty brings to mind.
Broke the very Chinese wall.
But do you know that
he smashed up against it? He's just yolk on the floor against the Chinese wall. It's fucking amazing, to be honest.
Yeah, he's like fried rice.
Yeah. Fucking hell. Max, what did you think of the UK-US trade deal then, with bearing that all in mind?
Yeah, so there's very little detail at the moment, but it seems to be the case that the UK has agreed to increase the quota of US beef coming in. So I think the quota was pretty much zero, so there was no beef coming in, so they're going to increase it. A figure I saw was 12,000 tons, which isn't a lot in the grand scheme of things. But Starmer and the government have said that they're not going to reduce standards. So there are probably conditions connected to that. Yeah, we'll import your beef, but it's not going to be it's not going to be hormone treated, or we're not going to have chlorinated. So they have sort of stuck to that. From the beginning, I've always thought this was maybe a security thing. The UK wants to increase its military spending, and maybe an agreement with Trump was, okay, we'll buy some of your stuff. So that could have been it. Or it could just be a case of, look, you will reduce the tariffs on goods coming in from the US and you do the same for us. And it's something that Trump can sell as a win. I don't think it's really going to have much of an impact either way. The NHS, there's no mention of that. The only concern is that there is, this is not really an agreement. It's just a deal. And an agreement is a full thing, while a deal is just something that people... Sorry, go on.
It's more a bilateral deal than anything. It's not a full-on trade deal. Like, he's gotten rid of a tariff that he put on UK steel and aluminium, or aluminum if you're American. And so what he's done is he's put this tariff on and said, look, I'll get rid of these tariffs, but in exchange you have to do something for me for free. Because that's what he's done. He's won. Like, he's won this leg of the trade war with the British, because, you know, he's put a lower car tariff. I don't know if that existed beforehand, but the UK is removing the tariff on ethanol for US goods and agrees that reciprocal market access on beef. So, yeah, American beef can come to the UK, but it's got to, you know, they're going to check it at the border. How are they going to do that when we don't have the border agents to even check EU goods? Yeah, no, sorry, it runs with McGregor. There was no check. But yeah, honestly, that's all it is. Like, do we have the border agents to deal with American beef coming in? I don't know, because we don't have it for the EU goods coming in. We don't even check Irish goods coming in. So, you know, good luck finding staff to do that, or the money to do that. Or as, you know, the Prime Minister once said, we can't afford that right now. So hormone beef coming to you on the sly, potentially. But yeah, you know, Trump's won. I think he's won against Starmer, because he put tariffs on. He said, look, I'll get rid of these if you do something for me. And he got that. And so he's going to use that to say, well, you know, if you hold tight, we'll get the agreements we want. So, you know, easy dub.
It's a bit weird in the fact that he smashed the global economy, which hits the American economy. And then he somehow still comes out as if he's won, even though he broke the entire... It's like smashing up football and somehow scoring a goal. You've destroyed an entire trade agreement around the world, and you somehow got a tiny bit back. So it's a victory.
He wanted to change the game, and he managed to do it. You know, essentially, he got rid of the offside rule or whatever analogy you want to come up with in that. But that's what he's done. I mean, he's saying, you know, free trade and stuff doesn't work, and then he's managed to use that to get concessions out of people who are desperate, and you know, the UK are desperate for any kind of win. And yeah, you know, Starmer's got two in a week, really, with India and the US, and it's going to look great. You know, he's going to push that domestically, but realistically, he hasn't really gotten that much.
Well, he got a bit of a scupper on the, I think it was the BBC interview. It just said, yeah, it's not as good as it was 6 months ago before Trump put in the tariffs. And then he did a Donald Trump-esque response. He went, yeah, that's the wrong question.
Prime Minister, this is a freeing up of trade conditions with America compared with where we were, but is it better than, say, 6 months ago, given, for instance, some tariffs are still there?
Well, Chris, the question you should be asking is it better than where we were yesterday?
Yeah, the guy sucks at interviews, though. That's the thing. And he's like, you know, I guess he's in a tough spot. But then again, that's what happens when you box yourself in on things like trade. Like, you know, we put ourselves in a vulnerable position where we can get bullied by other countries, and you know, Trump's the kind of guy, he will bully you. Like, he knows a chump in a desperate spot, and that's what the UK is. And so he, you know, he got away with it. You know, the EU aren't in such a bad place, so they can fight back. The China are the same. Other countries are the same, but the UK is in a really bad position, and we've got a country that's desperate for statistical growth.
There's no removal of the 10% trade barrier. Yeah, tariff, 10% tariff. That's been kept. Oh, so we're back to where we were 6 months ago, and then we're being told it's a win. And then from what we can tell, we're going to get shit food pumped in. Trump is, I mean, even though he smashed the game and it's probably going to damage the American economy beyond belief, it's actually a bit of genius in the fact that he just said some words and he forced access to the UK market. I mean, I can't figure out if that's genius or insanity. James, what do you think of this?
I think it's the latter for definite. I think he's a sociopath in the true literal sense. And I think half of his cabinet are as well. And I think many people around the world recognize that he's a wild card. You know, I mean, you literally don't know what the guy's going to do next. So, I mean, do you want to fuck with a guy like that when he's got his finger hovering above the big red button? I mean, his ego is so big. Who knows what he's capable of doing? And when it comes to any kind of trade deal, particularly the one, you know, between the US and the UK, I mean, there's such a disparity in the negotiating power there that, I mean, it's no way it's going to benefit us in any way that's in any way fair or proportional to the way it's going to benefit the US economy. I mean, it's just going to stamp all over whatever's workers' rights we got left or whatever food standards we got left, or, you know, it's further going to put the tentacles of American corporate power into the NHS. And, you know, and what could we do in retaliation or response to that? Nothing. We can't negotiate. We got nothing, no cards to negotiate with. You know, I mean, this is just the post-Brexit reality of where we find ourselves now, kind of atomized little islands, you know, that doesn't have any kind of neighbors to lean on, you know, in times of hardship, you know.
There were a few Brexiteers coming out saying this was a patriotic victory for Brexit, though. Is that not the case?
I think we just live in... I think Trump and Boris Johnson were kind of the people that popularized this post-truth reality that we all now live in. I mean, you could, like you said, you can just say some words and, you know, if you're lucky, the cards land in a certain way and you can take credit for it. If not, you can just say, that's the wrong question, or give me some alternate fact. You know, who the fuck knows? It's such a weird, bizarre, Kafkaesque, surreal world that we all live in now that, you know, black can be white and up can be down and right can be wrong. And, you know, it's hard to know what the fucking truth is anymore, you know?
Raj could be prime minister.
It could happen.
I mean, Max?
On that particular issue, yes, yeah. It seems to be he's heading in that direction. And my biggest criticism is the media. The media seem to be campaigning almost for Nigel Farage. I had a bit of a bust up with Ben Kentish from LBC on Twitter about this. You know, he was like saying, oh, you know, why is Nigel Farage so popular? And I said, because you guys made him popular. You gave him a massive platform. And he replied, no, you can't put it all down to the media. He was on LBC. He had his own show on LBC. He was on Question Time every other bloody week, it seems. Maybe it wasn't really the case, but it certainly felt like that.
Okay, I'm immensely grateful to you for everything you've done in British politics over the last few years. I used to be an ardent Remainer. I voted Remain. I believed in the European project. Mm-hmm. I believed that staying in the European Union was the best thing for us. And then something happened and... something monumental happened. It completely changed my opinion on the whole situation.
What was that monumental thing, Mark?
I was kicked in the head by a horse.
Right, very good. Okay.
And he used that as a way to answer whatever the topic. This is my big bugbear with the media when it comes to Nigel Farage. He used that to sell whatever the topic was. He would say, well, Brexit is the solution. Leave the European Union, that was the solution. So if they were talking about the NHS, well, if we leave the EU, then we won't have all these foreigners coming in. Schools, well, the schools are crumbling or their class sizes are too big. Well, if we leave the EU, we won't have all these foreigners coming in. So his answer to whatever the topic, whatever the problem, well, we leave the EU and that'll fix it. We bring down immigration, that will fix it. And the media were like, oh, okay, oh, very good. Okay, next question. And that was it.
I shouldn't laugh.
No, but you have to laugh because and we're seeing it exactly the same again. What are the main topics? Immigration, immigration, immigration. When actual so-called legal immigration is actually declining. Net migration is down 20% from last year. Now,
but that's Labour's a fact. Communication. That doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because well, for people like Farage, but for people like Farage, it has to be zero. And even if it's zero, it's like, well, I don't believe it's zero. You know, they're trying to hide something. Yeah. So then these people will never be satisfied, which is so frustrating. And I imagine Maj agrees, so frustrating that Labour are pandering to this. Oh, Nigel is talking about immigration. We better do something about it. And it's an idiotic approach because he's sitting on the sidelines. He's the heckler in the comedy club saying you're doing it wrong. And he knows.
Yeah.
At least for now, that he won't have to get up on stage. Now his councillors will have to do something. Now they're in charge. In some cases, they're running councils, so they'll have to do the hard work. And there was an interesting. And then I'll let you speak. I just wanted to say this: there was an interesting interview where a Labour councillor was saying, you know, we have to take calls at 3 a.m. You know, there are problems. We have to go to committee meetings. It's not a glamorous life.
It's not.
It's pretty stressful. Yeah, and it doesn't pay very well. And he said, "Our reform councillor is going to do this."
No.
Do you see that one of them got sacked after 3 days as well?
A few of them happened to yeah.
A few. Is it more than one?
One lady got suspended immediately because she was waiting for Ben Habib and Rupert Lowe to come up with a new party. And she said, once Rupert and Ben, you know, figure it out, I'll defect." And I was like, "Yeah, Batman wouldn't get that information out of me, dog. Yeah, I'd be, you know." very smart genius, very good vetting system Nigel has. So that's very good.
I'm gonna throw this probably back over to James and Max, because Max, you said the word bloody there. I've been listening more and more, and you seem to be getting more and more angry with what you're seeing. And James, I think I saw, was your latest music video song Outrage?
Outrageous, yeah. That was
pretty.
Yeah, that's one of them.
That felt. I mean, it's obviously punk, but it felt.
Well, it's off an
very
album
angry.
Great again. So the whole album is pretty fucking angry.
Do you both feel as if like rage has increased, like with your work? Because I'm your Max. Your sigh is becoming like it's almost iconic.
A cesspool. Cesspit, I should say.
Cesspool. I mean, you got into that argument with Ben Kentish. Like how I didn't realize that. I've missed this on Twitter, because obviously on Twitter the only thing you ever seem to fucking get is Elon Musk and Nigel Farage being shunted down your throat.
Andrew Tate, don't forget him.
Oh, yeah, fucking. So, what happened with the Ben Kentish thing? Did it resolve itself? Did you ask him to come and debate you on your show?
No, but I wouldn't be expecting him to. But it was no. I think he replied. No, I think. I replied to him after, and then it didn't go anywhere after that. He didn't continue. But it's like my bugbear is with the media. It's you guys created Farage. Now, Farage has been around for a long time. Yes, I understand that. But you guys gave him a massive platform. But it wasn't just the platform. It was an unchallenged one. So he could say whatever he wanted, and he received pretty much no pushback. The only time you ever see Farage really being embarrassed is in foreign media. He appeared on RTE, Irish State Media, some years ago, and he had his arse handed to him. He's appeared in, you know, on Australian media sometimes, or in American media, or in European media sometimes. And they're the ones who push back. But for some reason, and I think somebody mentioned this some years ago, many top-level journalists, they see it as, it's part of my career to interview Nigel Farage or the Prime Minister or whoever, and they don't challenge them because they want to have them back on their show, you know, sometime in the future. Sometimes you see politicians really challenged at local media level. So the local radio, because this journalist knows, look, this is my niche here. I'm not going to be a senior journalist in the BBC in the future. This is what I'm going to do. So they really go after the politicians there. So they're more open. They're more free to challenge. Laura Koonsberg, like she has her moments, but generally it's, you know, okay, here's my set of questions. You didn't answer them. Let's move on. And it's pathetic. And it's
not journalism.
It's not journalism. And I'm not a journalist, but how is it possible that I'm pushing back on these things, or we're pushing back on these things, when real journalists are, you know, with the exception of yourself, Alex, real journalists are not doing their job.
I think it's because they want to sell papers, you know,
yes.
And they feel that Nigel Farage is a popular figure, you know. And also he up until now he's had the benefit of being an outlier. He hasn't had the accountability of actually being in public office or anything like that, so he's been able to say outlandish things, and there's not really been any means of which to actually hold him properly to account about it. And you know, yeah, he makes for good copy. He can be funny and personable, with most of the actual politicians fucking boring as shit, you know. And I think it's the same with Boris Johnson. He was entertaining. You could get him on, you know, Have I Got News For You, and everyone thought he was a good old boy. And you know, I think it's a brand that I think the right have always been much better than the left at maintaining. And I think, you know, the media industry, they want to sell papers, they want to stay in the game. They don't, you know, they know they're going to lose readers if they come after Farage too hard, because, you know, as much as I hate to say it, a lot of people like him, you know.
It's a bit crazy, isn't it? Because did any of you see Stuart Lee this week on Channel 4 having a chin wag? Something he was saying, and it sort of reminded me of what he was saying. He was saying that you don't get these good writers anymore that were hermits, people who like isolated themselves and just worked on the book for 2 to 3 years to complete it, because the media or the editors or the publishers, let's say publishers are now saying you've got to have a social media platform to then be able to show that you can push and self-publish. And then we know that you can get your book out there and you're going to make some sales minimum. And you're almost like, wow, you're actually missing out on something there in the fact that these writers aren't being pushed forward. And it's the same with our politicians. Like the Green, we've said it. How many weeks have we said it? The Comms, Labour, Greens, Lib Dems are fucking awful.
Yep.
In some cases, non-existent.
Yep.
They've got the Greens. They've got 4 MPs. Where's their YouTube channel? It's non-existent. It's just mind-blowing that you would not step into the forefront. And then you're going, well, if they haven't even got their social media platform, it's not really giving impetus to the mainstream media and newspapers to get them, because you're not going to sell their programs. You're not going to sell their newspapers as clickbait, because you don't have any clickbait, at least on social media.
Oh, a lot of it's access, isn't it? That's why Derbyshire gets the junior ministers and Koonsberg gets the senior ministers. It's not because Koonsberg's a good journalist, because everyone knows she's not. It's because she's not, you know, the people go back on the show because it's easy. Same reason why Boris Johnson went on Andrew Marr's programme, not Andrew Neil's. It's all access. And so that's why you're always a nice interviewer, Peston. When does Peston ever aggressively question anyone? Never. He's ITV's top guy. This BBC's top person is Koonsberg. Trash. Derbyshire is probably one of the best interviewers. Even Krishnam, he doesn't really get ministers on his news round or anything like that. I guess Channel 4 don't really have a show like that. I wish they did, because they've actually got decent journalists and you know, economic correspondents that are quite good as well. But that's why it's all access. It's I won't go on your show if you ask me aggressive questions. Look at Piers Morgan, as much as he's a waste man. How many days was his show boycotted? No, I say his, him and Susanna Reid, because she occasionally did like good questioning back then. She's a lot better now. Ed Balls can't ask Yvette Cooper questions because that's his wife. So Susanna Reid, we don't have a choice there. And she did a good job. She did a really good job. But point being, it's access. You know, if you don't, if you ask them a question too aggressive, like say, you know, if we had a politician today say, just going to pick on you, James, because it's your first time here. If I ask you a load of, you know, really aggressive questions about your music and stuff, you're going to fuck those guys. I'm not going back on there. And yeah, you know, we lose a guest. So that's why I think Chomsky talked about it quite a lot, but it's mostly access. It's like, yeah, you're going to ask me basic softball questions, maybe the occasional tough one, so look like I'm really struggling. And then, you know, I'll be back on your show in a few weeks. And, you know, she doesn't really ask tough questions. You know, Derbyshire is really good at like, oh, you didn't answer the question. Going to ask you again. Going to ask you again. Okay, you refuse to answer the question. Okay, move on. And so that's what they should be doing. But, you know, if you look at Andrew Marr, like, he doesn't get a lot of the top guests on anymore, but he's a lot better at questioning people than he was before. So that's the reason, like, politicians avoid your show. Like, what's it called? The news agents, they don't really have a lot of top guests, to be honest. But they do have a guest-based show. They do want ministers on there, just rarely ever go on. So that's why.
Too tough. Although it is quite good when they go out to the public. I'll never forget Emily Maitlis. I mean, she's taken on some heavy hitters. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene asking if she believed in Jewish space lasers.
Can you tell me why so many people that support Donald Trump love conspiracy theories, including yourself? He seems to attract lots of conspiracy theorists.
Well, let me tell you, you're a conspiracy theorist, and the left and the media spreads more conspiracy theories. We like the truth. We like supporting our Constitution, our freedoms, and America first. So,
what about Jewish space lasers? Tell us about Jewish space lasers.
No, why don't you go talk about Jewish space lasers? And really, why don't you f*** off? How about that?
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
and then being told to fuck off.
And you're like, I mean, wow.
She should have most people sweating in an interview apart from Prince Andrew, because he never sweats. But sorry, I always loved making that joke. I don't know why. But point being is it's access, you know. It's like, you know, if we're mean to our guests, they're not going to come back on, you know. And there's a couple of chances I've had to do that, but you know, you got a show to run, and you want guests to come on. You want to have a good good spirit show on a Sunday. But point being is, you know, this got even Paxman as well. Paxman was one of the best interviewers in the country. He was on Newsnight. Who did he get on? Mostly junior ministers, like rookies and people like that. It's not because his skill level was low. It's because he's going to eat him alive. Like, he's fucking, that guy's crazy. I remember when I was younger, when I was in sixth form, and yeah, they brought on some junior minister on. And he was about one of the petrol tax increases. And she goes, yeah, it's great. You know, we were going to increase it by 10 pence. And now we didn't, you know, because of all the great work. And he's like, yeah, but you were never going to increase it because it's politically unpopular. You only just did this to scare motorists and say, look at this great thing that we've done. And we didn't have to do because of our great work. And she was like, what? And then she started choking. I was just like, this is brutal. But it's better than George Osborne going on there and looking like a dickhead. Do you know what I mean? Like, could you imagine the Chancellor on there getting absolutely smoked by Paxman? The guy who hated reading the weather out. He's like, yeah, 10 degrees here, 15 there. Great. See you tomorrow. But that's what I mean. Like,
that was genius. Take an umbrella.
The forecast, it's April. What do you expect?
Yeah, but that's my point is, like, apart from Derbyshire, the BBC really have no one. And they've hollowed out Newsnight. Now it's a glorified panel show where you had Mehdi Hasan, who's a very good, very good interviewer, debating some fucking Trump lunatic. And you're just like, oh, it's 50-50, guys. Well, maybe the Trump lady's right, or maybe Mehdi's right. I guess we'll never know. And it's like, no, she's fucking wrong. Question her. Like, she just said something dumb. Let him pursue it. And then she's like, oh, Mehdi, I never interrupted you. And it's like, you're saying dumb shit. Of course he's going to interrupt you. Stop making a clown of yourself. Like, give him a chance to at least do your job for you, which is to question her. Like, it's ridiculous.
I did like, I think it was Tom Harwood, who was interviewing Sebastian Gorka, presidential's deputy advisor. He's British-Hungarian. And he works for Trump. He's justifying slapping us with a 10% tariff. It's like, this is fucking treasonous.
He's got such a great voice, that is Seb Gorka. His voice is really deep, like proper British voice. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy?
Sounds like a Bond villain, actually.
Yeah, his name as well.
And Sebastian, he looks like a Bond villain.
My name is Sebastian Gorka. And you're just like, bro, he's going to steal all the gold or some shit.
Kill you with a
Tom
laser.
Tom Harwood shut him down. Just shut him down. He said, don't interrupt me when I'm talking. And he said, you're not going to dictate to me how to...
The members say, oh my gosh, is this going to fit into a timeline? It's not about timeline.
But
it's
you said 90
calendar.
Days, Mr. Gorker. No, I didn't 90 say 90 days. The president said 90 days.
Don't go BBC on me, okay? Let me answer the question and don't interrupt me, okay?
It's not about time.
Excuse me?
I'll choose when I speak. Thank you very much indeed. Please carry on.
Then this interview is terminated.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to terminate it? Goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you. Sebastian Gorka. Yeah.
That was it.
This is the thing about some of the journalists. Like, when you want a journalist to shut somebody down, they don't. Yeah. And when you want them to let them to speak. So, like, if you watch talk radio or talk TV, it's terrible because they're disagreeing with somebody. It's like, oh, I hate you. I hate you. And they shut them off.
Yeah.
And it's you can see it's just for performance. Mm. But, you know, sometimes like people like, Sebastian Gorka, you need to like say no. If you're talking bullshit, we're going to cut you off. You're not allowed just to say these things.
That's true. And also, journalists need to do a better job of fact checking because see, Piers Morgan had Kanye West on the other day, and he goes, "So Kanye's like, no, my name's Jay. Everyone knows this." And he's like, "Oh, you got 12 million followers. Is that how many?" He's like, "That's wrong." And he's like, "Oh, I've been told you got 13 million." He's like, "Yeah, when you show me some respect, I'll come back on your show."
I haven't spoken for a while. How are you?
I'm doing good. I don't use the term West, you know, the whole drop the slave name idea.
Okay, so we just call you Yeah, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, look, when I watch what you put out on X, you've got 32 million followers, so you're one of the most followed people.
See, wait, now look right now, you're not gonna take inches off my dick, bro. Like, how many followers do I have?
Well, how many is it?
I think you could do the study. You got a whole staff over there.
I thought it was 32 million. How many is it? You obviously know.
I mean, don't help them out. You know, they.
I'm told it's 33 million now. So congratulations. You're slightly bigger following than I thought.
No, No, congratulations. Your information is correct. You're not just some, you know, dude trying to sub. You know, I'm a gift, bro. You know what I mean? Why do all you people in media act like you haven't played my songs at your weddings or graduations or at funerals or when your child was born? You know, you take somebody that's living like a Lennon, a Michael Jackson, and you just take all this time to just, like, that nuance right there. It's idiotic. It just shows the hate that you put out for people that put love. There's so much love in the art that I put out.
With all due respect, what are you talking about? I haven't said anything.
What are you talking about? It's dirty. Okay, now you're not taking accountability or responsibility.
You implied I haven't played your music. Of course I played your music.
No, sir. This is what you get for now. We can circle back when you can count.
So funny. I'm not going to ask you to play the clip of what they were talking about because it was bad. It was really bad. But point being is, like, if you can't do basic journalism, like getting the guy's name right for a start, like, yeah, that's not good. And, you know, like, when you think about this, these people have entire teams right and they can't get basic things right. That's what annoys me the most is, like, us are like, it's pretty much a solo thing for the most part. Like, I don't have a research team. Like, I have a Discord, which some people contribute to when I ask. But that's about it. And so, like, you know, how do you get, like, things wrong? How do you not know basic facts in the middle of an interview? Mm-hmm. Like, it don't make sense, man. I think we're talking about comms, actually. And, you know, I saw Polanski's run in to be leader of the Greens. And I hope he does learn something from social media as well and actually try and set the agenda and things like that. Like, he does try and talk more on socials because he's got a whole YouTube platform he could talk to. Like, he could be a guest on anyone's show, to be honest with you. I think anyone
you should get him on this if you can.
He's been on mine. He was on my show. I talked to Zach now and again. Yeah.
No, I thought he's too big dog for us, but yeah, we'll try. But that's the point, though, is it? Like, you know, you should you know, if the media, TV media aren't going to talk to him, just do the podcast circuit. You know, I'm sure even Austerity Boy and the War Criminal will have him on. That's Rory, fucking forgot his name, Alistair Campbell, and the other one. You got them. Austerity. I'm sure Navara, he's Austerity Boy. I'll not have it any other way. You got Navara. I'm sure they would have it. No, Navara would definitely have him. There was obviously the news agents. They would take him. Like, they're, you know, we'll obviously have him. If he's good enough to be on our podcast. But point being is, you know, there's loads of. Like, I think that's what they should start doing. If the media aren't going to talk to you, then, you know, go on the podcast circuit because it's free. It's free wins. You could even set one up with one of the other MPs. And just do a thing every other week and just discuss what's going on. Like, what have the Greens done this week? Which is probably block solar panels in your constituency and pylons and stuff. But, you know, at least we know you're doing stuff. You know, you're not just sitting in the field or wherever Green MPs do.
Fucking hell.
Okay.
Eating tofu.
Yeah, work right.
It's funny, but it's true.
Has he done the fucking rock and roll?
No, my alarm was going off.
My job. I've blown up your fucking show.
I'm gone.
Goodbye. Never getting back on.
He's definitely not coming on if I say shit like that to him.
We've been talking about Piers Morgan and he just ran off, ran out of the studio.
Piers Morgan to Zach Polanski.
What? Piers, so what happened with you and Meghan Markle? But yeah, no, honestly, like, just do the podcast circuit. Like, it just makes sense. A lot of people are plugged into new media and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he'll get, I think, an easiest time, I think.
That's what we did with the Rejoin EU party. Because we were never going to get any mainstream media. So I just went, well, why don't we just ask all the YouTubers if they want to have us on? They get some practice at interviewing a politician or wannabe politician. And we'll get some views and traction and some support, hopefully. And it seems like a no-brainer. But the weird thing was, no one else was doing it. I think maybe Politics Joe had Zach on this week, didn't they?
Yeah.
I think so. It was a different lady they had on, so I was a bit confused as to what was going on. But yeah, I think they did. And, you know, they had one of their guys talking about, you know, like, stop using kind of woke language. And I think that's fair. I think it should use more kind of basic language for people. Like, you know, like, we could talk on this podcast about, like, bourgeoisie and all this stuff, but everyone's going to be like, what's that? You know, like, you know, dumb it down for people, or at least make it, like, accessible. Not dumb it down, make it accessible for people, you know, in terms of terminology and things like that. And yeah, I think with the green stuff as well, just make that more understanding for people of, yeah, you know, we're going to try and build as much here, turbines, create jobs. It's going to make energy cheaper.
But also insulating homes. This is something I keep banging on about, is like, you know, sell the idea of because it's something that people understand. It's quite easy to understand. You know, it's not something distant. It's not like, well, we're going to build a wind turbine, you know, 500 kilometers away or something. Yeah. We're going to build, you know, we're going to insulate your home and your bills are going to drop immediately. And this is what we need to do. And it creates jobs.
That's a tangible thing, isn't it? It's a tangible thing that people can understand. And I think that's the problem that the left has so much, is that we deal with abstract concepts that are in the future, you know, the environment and, you know, your rights and all this sort of stuff. Whereas the, you know, the right have got a much better branding, in the sense that they're dealing with immediate threats. It's these guys, they're going to take your job. And if you get me, I'm going to sort that out and it's job done. But you're exactly right. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be abstract. We can change the terminology and we, you know, we can work on our, you know, on our kind of outreach better. And you know, the housing insulation example you just mentioned is a perfect example, because that's a tangible thing that can be done right now, which would just slash your energy usage, would help the environment, it create jobs, you know, all blah, 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 blah. And, you know, these are real things. So I think there's definitely a kind of branding makeover that we need on the left. And, you know, that's our fault, really, I think.
Do you feel it needs to be more aggressive?
I think it needs to be more passionate. Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, it's one thing to be right and to be spouting facts and everything, but if the other guys have got a much better story that's getting people riled up, and that's what people are going to listen to, isn't it? You know, I think we just need to wise up to that reality, really, that stories sell. I think, you know, Marge, you said that earlier, stories sell, you know, better than facts, you know what I mean? So I think passion. Where's the passion on the left? You know, I mean, where's Tony Benn of 2025? Like, I don't see any passion. And that's why, you know, the Labour Party and all the others are moving gradually. We're having to move over to the right in order to appease the growing public sentiment, which is over in that side, because that's where the passion is. And that's where the anger and the rage is. And that's how people are feeling. So in order to kind of be part of that conversation, the left is having to slide over to that side of the table, which it shouldn't. It should stand its ground and say, no, this is the fucking, you know, this is what we stand for. And we're not, you know,
somebody I greatly admire is Bernie Sanders. I wish we could just clone him and then, you know, teach him to speak with an English accent or something.
because he's always being consistent.
But he also talks about like wages. He talks about the cost of living. He talks about bills. He talks about things that are, you know, he doesn't talk about, you know, social justice. He doesn't talk about, you know, things that are quite abstract for most people. He talks about bread and butter issues. Yes. You know, people can't pay their bills. People can't make it to the end of the month. People are getting into medical debt. These are real things that people, it resonates with them. Yep. And I think on the left, and I hope Zach is going to start using this type of language, these are the types of things he needs to be talking about, because people, that's actually something impacting me, a bit like the insulation. It's something tangible. It's something you can associate directly with your life, because I think what's happened is maybe we've become a bit more abstract, or we've talked at a very high level thing. You know, for example, I said before that a big problem with the European Union was that people didn't see what it was doing in their community. So they were like, well, we might as well leave the European Union, because I don't see any benefits of it. When in reality, there were benefits. It's just people didn't know that they existed.
And it was also, again, the media and the politicians that have been slagging it off as any excuse to not take responsibility.
And it happens all over the Europe. Yeah. And it happens all over Europe as well. Politicians are in a fix. Oh, it's the EU's fault.
It was interesting as well, because you've made me tweak something else. A lot of these things that we're discussing and always constantly debating over, that most of us on the left would agree with and don't understand why the right are bringing it up into conversation, they're dragging us into that conversation to defend them instead of talking about these things that you just mentioned, Max. So the one that always gets me is critical race theory. What is it? Well, it's an academic theory about critiquing race and what happens within that, and whether or not people should be aware of it. And it's also with the term woke, being awake to racism. These are academic fields in many respects. I think awake to racism less so. I think that's been around for over 100 years as a term, to being awake to racism. But instead of talking about the things that you've just mentioned, Max, like cheaper housing, the NHS, and all of these things, which the left feels better and safer hands with, we're having to argue with these points, and then they're having all the coverage in the press about it. And it's literally they've taken it over with stuff that is important, but we should have moved past on like 50 years ago and shouldn't be having debates on. And we're having to because it's so toxic and damaging to society. It's actually completely overbearing in the conversation. I think maybe that is why Bernie Sanders did so well in the States, because he just constantly concentrated on things that are affecting people while supporting that without having to shout it. So, you know, if he was getting in, he'd be supportive of LGBTQ+. He'd be supportive of minorities. He'd be supportive of women's rights. And then you know that the main focus point is the economy. And interestingly, I think most people in the UK seem to be pretty concerned about housing, about the NHS and the cost of living. And the left isn't talking about that because all these other issues have come in. And a lot of them have been so blown out of proportion, like critical race theory, which is literally an academic field that, you know, 99% of the population wouldn't understand. It's mind-blowing that that's been told, Max.
No, I just want to say, like, if you listen to what Farage has been saying over the last number of months, he's been talking about fairness. Oh, look at all these immigrants coming in. They're taking houses. This isn't fair. And people understand fairness. It's a very simple concept. And we should be using that. You know, we should be saying, okay, when it comes to, for example, trans rights, gay rights, whatever, we can say, well, let's treat people with respect. Just that's it. Everyone understands the idea of respect. Yeah. You may not agree with people's positions, but let's treat people with respect. And then at a very high level, we consider, we keep pushing this, treat people with respect. We have to take back control of fairness. You know, is it fair that somebody funnels money into an offshore bank account and doesn't pay their taxes? That's not fair. You're struggling to get by. Is that fair? Is it fair that politicians are not looking after the most vulnerable in society? That's not fair. So I think we need to push fairness. Don't allow Nigel Farage to take advantage or to take ownership of that word. Yep. That should be our word.
Yep.
You know, it's not fair that people are being treated like crap when they come in to do jobs that we don't want to do. That's not fair. We need to treat people with respect. We need to be fair. It's a high level concept. And then we can work our way down through different policies. But I think that has to be the goal. That has to be the vision. Fairness, respect, things that everyone, you know, whether you're on the left or on the right, you generally say, well, fairness is a good thing.
I thought 100%. It reminds me of Nicola Sturgeon putting down Farage when he was moaning about migrants again. And she just said, no, we should be talking about them as if they're humans. They're human beings. That's the main point.
An alien concept for him.
An alien concept. And he had this dirty little grin on his face as she said it, like, ha, 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 ha. Almost like...
On the NHS, and if up to £2 billion a year is being lost on health tourism, surely that is a
Nicola Sturgeon.
When somebody is diagnosed with a dreadful illness, my instinct is to view them as a human being, not consider what country they come from. Exactly. But I want to go back to something Ed Miliband said earlier on.
I'm going to have to be careful because I probably get sued here, but, you know, and if I was writing for an evil character in an evil murder mystery, racist murder mystery type of thing, I could imagine a character pulling a face similar to that. Fucking hell, that was convoluted. That would make me think, yeah, but they're not human, are they?
whatever woman. Would be
he's like yeah, they're human. Subhuman.
Yeah. Like, it was that type of grin that I saw across his face.
Wow.
And you were just like, when you hear about the stories of him, like, seeing Nazi songs in villages at the age of, like, what was it, 16, 17? You're just going, apple hasn't fallen far from the tree, has it? And you're also going, if you're 17 in the 70s and 80s, where are you picking up that type of stuff from? Because you can't get it from the internet. I bet you there's no book in the library with Nazi songs in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So where did he learn that? No, I've never heard anyone confront him on that specific allegation. They've made allegations he made racist remarks, but never specifically on the allegation that it was Nazi songs that he was singing in the village.
But don't you know he's kicked all the racists out of Reform?
And then he brought a load more back in. It's the Barney Gumble meme where he gets kicked out by Mo and then he appears back in the bar.
Do you rate his chances in the next election currently? I'm gonna throw it at each of you. James, what do you think of Farage?
Yeah, I do.
And what would that be in your what do you picture him getting in the next election?
I don't know. I don't know. I just feel like we are losing that battle, that messaging battle, quite clearly. You know, all over the world, you know, the right is gaining ground fast. And that seems to be very much the momentum that we're going in politically. So it wouldn't surprise me to see that continue. And Farage is such a kind of popular figure, whether you like him or not, you know, and has been for a while now. And, he, you know, the numbers are going in their direction. So, yeah, I don't foresee that slowing down at any point.
Madge?
Yeah, I reckon probably get quite a few. So I reckon like probably 50 or something like that. It'll do quite well. I don't think he'll win. I think he'll come close to winning. I think one of the miscalculations people seem to be making is they think the Tories wouldn't vote for reform because they hate each other. But I think one of the things is like a few more years of Labour being mid and, you know, coming up with policies they don't like, and they might hold their nose and vote for the other party because they hate Labour. You know, same thing that happened this time around. You know, a lot of Lib Dem voters who don't like Labour, a lot of Labour voters who don't like Lib Dems, maybe even Tory voters, you know, got sick of their party and said, we'll vote for someone else. So I can definitely see that happening. I can see Labour voters not really coming out because, you know, people don't think Farage is going to do well. If you look at how many people, you know, different groups Labour have attacked, they've attacked the Asian community, they've attacked the trans community. They've, you know, you got massive briefings against women in the cabinet. And then you had a dude saying, well, you know, I'm not too familiar with this, with these takes about misogyny. I'm like, you're a dude, bruv. Like, come on, man, grow up. Like, he's the last person you want defending misogynistic arguments, because Louise Hay was talking about it recently. Of course, they're not briefing misogynistic stuff against you, dumbass. You're a dude. So, you know, like, it's not looking good. And I think, you know, they're very lucky the Tories have a shit leader, but also means that it doesn't split the vote that aggressively. If they had a leader that competed more with Farage, it splits their vote more aggressively. Whereas if Farage is the clear winner out of the two, I think he'll do well. I don't think he'll win anywhere close to an election. I think you're talking about 50 seats, but it'll give him a bigger platform. You know, I saw Beth Rigby talking about, oh, you know, Farage has got, now he's got a local, this big win, you know, now he's got a bigger platform. He's like, you motherfuckers gave him a big platform when he had like -5 councillors. Like, it doesn't matter what number he has. All that means is now you can legitimately cover him more, saying, wow, this guy's got more MPs and he's got more councillors now. Now we can talk about him on every day, on every channel.
It's funny because the major party that's in opposition to Brexit has got no traction. But when UKIP were in the exact same position, they were getting full traction because they were the only opposition party to the EU, which I just find mind-blowing.
That's what Malice talked about. You know, sorry, it's the 50-50 thing, is they have to find someone with the opposing view. You know, that's what she was talking about. You know, if you have 99 economists that agree on something, you have to have the one economist, which is Patrick Minford, who disagrees with that, and you platform them and you make them look equal. And that's the biggest problem the BBC and other news organizations have, is like, you'll get some absolute lunatic on and a person who knows. You know, I saw it during the pandemic. You had a guy talking about herd immunity, and you had I think it was like a Spanish scientist going, you're crazy. Like, do you know how many people you're going to kill by doing this? But it's like, they're both professors and they're both equal. So, you know, who knows who's right? It's like, if the fucking dude who wants everyone to die, all the oldies to die, because he doesn't realize a lockdown's possible, but they're both equal guys.
Max?
I think there's a pretty good chance that Farage will win, become prime minister, because I think there are two factors. One is Labour. If Labour don't turn things around, if they don't improve the situation for ordinary people, this is going to funnel more voters into the arms of reform. But it's also, I keep coming back to this idea that it's a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy with Farage, because the media are like, well, he's doing really well, so we need to give him a bigger platform. Oh, he has a huge platform. Well, then we need to give him, this helps him do well. He does better, so they give him a bigger platform. So it's almost like, if you ask journalists, they would say, well, he's probably going to be prime minister, so we might as well just go with it, as opposed to really challenging that idea. The only sort of saving grace could be that if reform... there's a lot of time, and as Madge said, you know, if the Conservatives come up with a better leader, there's a chance that this person could split the vote. I mentioned there's a guy called Alex Bughart or something like that. He's actually I don't like the guy, but he's actually really good at speaking. He's good on his feet. He'd be a much better leader if, I don't know whether he could lead the party, but he's much better at questioning the Prime Minister or ministers. He'd be much better as a leader, as opposed to Kimmy Badenoch, who's just completely useless. So they could do better if they had a new leader. But I think there's still time for Farage to run out of steam. he's doing really well. He's at a probably at his peak now, doing really well, and he could bring himself down. And if Labour started to improve the situation somewhat, people may say, well, yeah, I'm not really convinced about Farage. So it's a double-edged sword for him. You know, the more exposure he gets, the more support he gets. But on the other hand, you know, he's a Marmite character. So people would be like, well, you know, the more I hear about Farage, the more I'm convinced not to vote for him. So I think there are a lot of factors in play.
The left had learned anything, they would know that all you got to do is call somebody an anti-Semite. Boom, it's over. They should pull a Corbyn on him. Just do it. Come on. Can't it work?
Probably get more votes from his supporters.
I saw the stats that yesterday. Corbyn was 79% of the things that were said about Corbyn in the press were negative. They absolutely went for him. And as you said, it was the anti-Semitism angle. And you're going, fuck.
It wasn't. There was loads of stuff. Broadband communism on Newsnight. Stuff like that. So there was every angle, like they went after him. And it's bad.
It was funny because I thought you were going for a different Alex, Max, and you both talked about a new conservative leader.
Wow, Alex, I didn't realize you were in charge of the party. That's crazy. We've got the new leader of the Conservative Party.
We have a mole.
The greatest mole of them all. Interestingly, again, there is a segue to mole. Boris Johnson, Alex, and he did talk about whack-a-mole, and then he got in trouble and got told off for talking about whack-a-mole, and then he had moles inside his cabinet. But Boris, is that an option?
No. I think he's too unpopular. I think people, the thing is, once you're in power, people are familiar with who you are. Like with Starmer, you know, like people know who he is. You know, he's the guy who got the freebies, the free suit, the guy who went to loads of concerts, the guy who wanted your grandma to freeze, and a lot of other negative stuff. Like, I still can't believe. Do you know that's the UK is actually known globally for cutting winter fuel allowance? You know that there was a guy who runs the IFS, who's in charge of it. He goes, they were talking about on Times Radio, and he goes, you know, he spoke to a major insurance company, and he goes, you know, we were discussing the winter fuel allowance cut, and he's like, what? And he's like, yeah, you know, it's known around the world that that happened. And I was like. And if you look at some of the polling that came out, it was like popularity versus like knowledge of something happening. So the winter fuel allowance was very unpopular and very well known. It's like 90% of the people polled knew about it, and about that many were against it. It was like very low in favorability. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. You save, you know, you didn't even save any money because more people went on a pension credit, whatever it's called. So you save nothing and it costs you everything.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like, what are you doing? Like, honestly, like their team's so bad. Like, that's a whole different conversation for probably another day. But that Morgan McSweeney is the most washed guy in politics. At least Dominic Cummings, like, you thought, oh, this guy looks savvy. And then after a few months, you're like, yeah, he's briefed against the PM's wife. He's done. But with McSweeney, like, he didn't even have like a win period. Like, you know, Boris Johnson during, you know, up until Partygate really broke, he seemed like, yeah, he was doing okay. With these guys, that they haven't even lasted like 6 months. Well, when did she announce the fuel cut? Was it last year? Was it the start of this year? Yeah, that they lost all the goodwill.
Budget, yeah,
yeah, they did that and the national insurance increase. And you're like, okay, everyone hates you now.
How do you get that back?
You can't. That's the problem. Like, that's the problem. The only thing you can do is replace Reeves, which, you know, he never should have picked Rachel Reeves in the first place. But all he can try and do is replace Reeves in a few years. But I don't think it's very often a chancellor gets replaced. Mm-mm. It's normally when a new PM comes in, like the chancellor gets replaced. Like George Osborne was there until Cameron went, Hammond was there until May went. The only person who replaced chancellors was Boris Johnson. He had three, I'd say Zahawi, Sunak, and Javid. Truss replaced one because she crashed the economy. And then Sunak had, who's Sunak's chancellor?
Jeremy
Hunt.
He was there the whole time. Yeah. And then that's it. You know, we're into these one. I mean, Tony Blair kept Gordon Brown.
But can Starmer actually replace anyone? Because it seems to be Morgan McSweeney that's in charge of everything.
Make Gordon Brown Lord Brown and then just stick him in as
chancellor. No, he's not going to do that. He's going to make Morgan McSweeney Lord McSweeney and then get him as chancellor.
You bring up McSweeney every fucking show.
Yeah, because he's in charge of the country, isn't he? He's like, you know, he's running the game.
No,
like,
he is really running the show.
He's like, Starmer's like, I need to go to the bathroom. He's like, hello, Morgan. Yeah, yeah, I gotta go. Yeah, it's bad.
But didn't they say that Starmer's like the guy at in the front of the? Well, they put him in sitting in the train that's driverless or something.
It's like that. weekend at Bernie's. It's weekend at Keir's. But no, it's bad. Like, you know, like he trusts McSweeney because he got him the job in the first place. He won the leadership contest. He won, you know, an election, which, you know, okay. And, you know, I don't think he has many people that are good at advising him. Like, you know, he's very wooden. You know, there were talks about ages ago, like the leader of the Labour Party was hard to contact once he's in opposition. So, you know, he's very introverted and he just looks awkward on TV, man. Like when he does interviews, they know he's comfortable when he's talking about his dad or his mum, like everything else, he just looks uncomfortable discussing. So I don't know. Like yeah, replacing McSweeney would be good, but you know, I think replacing Reeves at this point would be better. But, you know, it's bad news all around, I think. Like, it's going to be a while until people feel the benefit of their policies. Like, I've seen people discuss the NHS stuff. I don't know anyone under the age of, like, 30, 35 who really uses the NHS or goes to a doctor that much. You know, luckily, I rarely go to the doctor or go to the hospital. So I don't think most people feel the impact. It's mostly, like, oldies who will feel it. People, like, 40s plus that will feel the benefit of it. But even then, when you go to the election, we're like, well, I remember I didn't have to do the 8 a.m. roulette, you know, one time this year. When I went to the GP once, so you know, that's great. I don't think anyone's gonna really like care that much.
Maybe.
But waiting to spin cut.
On that cheerful note, thank you to our guests. Thank you to my co-host. If you got this far in the video, hit that like and subscribe button. Thank you very much, everyone.
Bye. Thank you. Bye bye.
Tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.
Welcome to the Twilight Zone, where ordinary things don't happen very often. Max, your scenario. You're given emergency powers to run the EU for 3 months. However, you've got a power share in order to be able to do this. You can choose Meloni and Viktor Orban.
Oh, God.
Or the Calabrian Mafia.
Who?
They're the guys at the bottom of the boot who are like fucking ruthless and have taken over the south of Italy and Sicily.
No.
Probably the Calabrian Mafia, because you might as well go for the real thing as opposed to... because it gets stuff done, okay?
You can see Max disappear real fast in that scenario.
Oh, that Nigel Farage.
He's like, where's he gone?
He sleeps with the fishes.
He's supporting a flyover.
Wow.
We took care of him.
It didn't take you long to think of that.
That's not a tough one to be fair.
If you're in Italy, you understand how things work.
Okay, James. You have got the opportunity for the biggest punk revival tour since The Clash. However, the people sponsoring this tour are saying you can either have Nigel Farage for 10 minutes at the beginning of every show, or you have Suella Braverman as your manager.
So is Nigel going to be on the stage for 10 minutes before the gig?
Every then gig.
It's got to be that then.
Do you want Farage at 10 minutes?
It's got to be the whole hell. Yeah, if we're going to put him in a room full of punk rockers for 10 minutes where he can't escape. Fucking right. Bring it on. And we'll be at the side of the stage, you know, so you can't leave. Yeah, I'm game for that, man. The biggest punk revival tour since The Clash. And you're going to put Nigel Farage in that room? Oh, that would be delicious viewing. Yeah, that would be delicious. And if they didn't whip his ass up, I sure would. Be like, it's my stage. I'll do what I want.
Every
every single night. By the end of the tour, he'd be fucking bedraggled. Like, yeah, man, that'd be beautiful.
As long as Johnny Rotten is not there.
Well, yeah. We want to turn it into the Farage, you know, fucking...
The Rotten Farage.
Fan club, you know what I mean? But Braverman, I just could not tolerate Braverman or stomach Braverman on any form whatsoever. You know, so yeah. Out of those brilliant two options that I'm stuck with, I'd have to go with Farage, I think, you know, because, yeah. But imagine Braverman as your band manager. Jesus Christ, man. And we had an Asian in our band originally. I know she's Indian, but I mean, like, you know, she, her track record on that front is not particularly positive, is it? She'd be like, he's got to go back to wherever he came from. That's the first thing we got to do in this band.
The decisions that she would make.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Right, we're going to Rwanda.
Yeah. Touring to Rwanda.
Yeah. Hi.
Bye. Who thinks up these questions, by the way? That's
him.
Guilty as charged.
Like I said earlier, man, that sounds like the sort of conversations we have in the band van, but not quite as intellectual as that. It's normally like, if you had a choice, right, of being rogered by, like, you know, a pole or or like eating ice cream all day every day, like, which one would you go for? And we talk about that for about 4 hours.
That's an interesting debate. Matt, what are your thoughts?
That's the level of discourse in our band.
I'm just trying to keep it PG, you know? Yeah. Frank, I was trying to keep it PG.
Right, I am going to end.
Some people complain about the rain in April. We don't have to this year, thanks to climate change. It's gone to Ireland. Enjoy your Sunday.